May you please join me in opening prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved
Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Amen. I had found some passages in the Gospel of Ramakrishna that I planned to read, and so I picked up this book on Swami Ramdas on himself, and I asked Papa if he wanted to weigh in on the topic at all. And so, interestingly, he gave a description of the role Ramakrishna played in his own life. When Ramdas was young, attending school, he read the life and teachings of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa. From that time, he developed a fascination for his divine personality. The impression thus formed was silently working in him, and he was feeling that to live just like the dumb, driven cattle was not the object of life, and that we have to strive for the eternal verities of life so that we could evolve to a state of complete union with the divine, who is at the basis of the manifestation before us. This impression took a deep root in until the climax in 1922. That year, Ramdas was called upon to leave everything for the sake of God and to take to a wandering life. In the course of his wanderings, God took him to Calcutta and from there to Dakshineshwar. He reached Dakshineshwar at night, and the next morning he was eager to see the room in which Ramakrishna lived. Fortunately, a sannyasi who was present there took Ramdas to a room, and as soon as he entered it, he felt an inexpressible ecstasy. He could not stand it. He rolled on the floor, which had been hallowed by the feet of Sri Ramakrishna. He was overwhelmed with joy that he lost consciousness of the body and lay on the floor, still and calm for some time, until he got up and left the place in an almost dazed condition. That was the first touch of the great Mahatma. His presence was intensely felt when Ramdas entered the room. After that, he was going from place to place, but that impression, that thrill he experienced at Dakshineshwar remained with him and remains with him even now when he thinks of the time he feels he is there. Even ever afterwards, Ramdas visited Dakshineshwar two or three times and felt the same inner peace and calmness that he first felt. From that, Ramdas has told you, you can form an idea of what an inspiring personality Ramakrishna was. Ramdas looks upon him as a divine incarnation. And I remember well entering into that room and feeling such peace there and such a wonderful spiritual presence. I've been there a few times. And the first time that I went to Belur Mutt, which is where Vivekananda established a temple for Ramakrishna. It's across the Ganges on the other side and a little bit further towards the ocean, Calcutta. And we went there, and there's a large, absolutely beautiful temple there that is his Samadhi temple. We walked up past these columns that were supporting this giant roof, all covered in marble, and we went up to the front, and there was a statue of Ramakrishna. So we sat on the floor, and there was a few others who were there, and gradually the place began to fill up, and there are many, many people who were sitting there meditating. And as I sat meditating, I was powerfully drawn within, and through the inner vision, I saw there Ramakrishna, and he was seated just as he was in the statue, and he is absolutely beautiful. And for some reason, I just felt to lay my head down on his lap, which he accepted very nicely, and patted me on the head, and then I went in past all form into the pure spiritual light of being. And I was in that state for some time, unconscious of the passing time or the outer events, because when I gradually came down, no one was left in that large temple. I was the only one sitting there, and where the statue had been, there were doors now that were closed in front. So apparently, sometime in between, they had closed the doors, and everybody had got up and left. But I sat there and just felt the wonder of this great spiritual presence. It's an interesting concept that human forms can become divine expressions. And through that divine expression, there is a purity, there is an uplifting force and power that can take you beyond yourself into higher realms. And it's not unique to India, because every religion and every place has it, but India has it in spades, you might say. They have this natural affinity for divine personalities, and oftentimes they come from nowhere at all, so to speak. There's no grand organization or hierarchy that brings people into being, and perhaps this accounts why there are so many saints that are there. Ramakrishna came from a very small village, and he was thought to be insane by quite a few of the people because he was very different from everyone else. He would go into these divine ecstasies even as a little boy. He was walking along on some paddy fields, and he looked up, and there was very dark rain clouds. And suddenly in front of the dark rain clouds, these white swans or white geese came flying in front, and that image of the dark background with these brilliant white birds flying in form just instantly took him up into a state of samadhi. And so without any training or anything else, he was merging his consciousness in with God, but it made him an unusual child. And he didn't relate to others in totally normal ways, and so they sent him off to be trained as a priest to be with his brother at the newly built Dakshineshwar temple, which was dedicated to Mother Kali, but there's also a temple there that's dedicated to Krishna and Radha. There are, I believe there's 9 small temples along that are all dedicated to Shiva. So there's these many representations. It's right on the banks of the Ganges. And Ramakrishna got there, and it's very specific training that you go through in order to do the ritual worship. It has to be done in just a precise manner. And if it's not done exactly correctly, then there's an entire ritual for cleansing the temple and starting all over again. And that can take days or weeks to reconstitute the temple. So Ramakrishna was trained in this, and he would be worshiping the various images there, and he was being trained on Mother Kali. And he would put the flowers and the sandal paste on Mother Kali and do everything correctly and wave the lights before her. But as he became more and more God-conscious, he would forget who the Kali image was and who he was, and he would get them mixed up. And suddenly he was putting the flowers on himself, he was putting the sandal paste on himself, because he saw the Divine Mother equally inside of him as well as in this image. Well, this was a very improper thing to do. He would go into states of samadhi and be laying down in front of the image. Well, this was not permissible at all, particularly if your feet are pointed towards the image or the saint. This is considered very disrespectful, but he was completely unmindful of himself. And he would pass into samadhi and just fall into the, on the spot right there. And so the other priests were very upset with him and pushed to have him out completely. But the manager, who was the son of the Rani, the wealthy woman who had built this place, he became convinced that Ramakrishna was no ordinary person, because one day he saw Ramakrishna pacing back and forth along in front of the temples. And as he did so, he saw him turn into Shiva and the image of Shiva. And so he rubbed his eyes. He was a material man, you might say. He was dedicated towards keeping the temple well, but he wasn't particularly a spiritual man in that sense. So he wasn't expecting any such kind of vision like this, and he rubbed his eyes and he looked again, and there again he saw Shiva, and it lasted for some time. And then eventually he transformed and came back into the form of Ramakrishna. And so he knew through this that he was no ordinary man, and so he began to support him, and he was allowed not to do the priestly duties, as that upset so many people. But he was allowed to live there, and he went through intense sadhana there, intense spiritual practices. And gradually he went through all the different stages of realization until he came into his complete union with God. And then he worked his way back down into human consciousness again, and he began to draw disciples to him. And one of the greatest you've read about in the autobiography of a yogi, Master Mahasya, who Master met when he was just a boy and had such a tremendous influence on Master, to the point where Master asked him if he was his guru. And Master Mahasya said, "No, I'm not your guru. He will come later, and he will transform your great love for God into wisdom." And this book is written, The Gospel of Ramakrishna, by Master Mahasya. This is dated Monday, June 25th, 1833. Sri Ramakrishna was at Balram Bose's house in Calcutta. Rakal and M, Master Mahasya refers to himself as M, were seated near him. The master was in ecstasy. He conversed with the devotees in an abstracted mood. "Ramakrishna, let me assure you that a man can realize his inner self through sincere prayer. But to the extent that he has the desire to enjoy worldly objects, his vision of the self becomes obstructed." M. "Yes, sir, you always ask us to plunge into God." Master, joyously, "Yes, that's it. Let me tell you that the realization of self is possible for all without any exception." Master Mahasya, "That is true, sir, but God is the doer. He works through different beings in different ways according to their capacity to manifest the divine. God gives to some full spiritual consciousness and others he keeps in ignorance." Master, "No, that is not so. One should pray to God with a longing heart. God certainly listens to prayer, if it is sincere. There is no doubt about it." It's interesting to see the evolution of Master Mahasya. When he first meets Ramakrishna, he argues with him the first time he meets with him. And Master Mahasya said that was the first and last time he ever dared to do that. But then afterwards, for a very long time, Ramakrishna would ask him questions, and he would not answer at all. He would just keep mum, knowing that he knew nothing. And as we progress now, he's venturing and getting his feet wet at, you might say, at offering up what he understands to be the truth. And after the Master had said, through prayer you can get to God, and Master Mahasha is saying, no, you know, it's all God's will, which of course, in one way, the Master would agree with. But in this sense, no. You must feel that you can pray to God, that you can yearn for God in order to awaken God within yourself. And this is also absolutely true. Absolutely true. So don't feel that there's nothing that you can do to awaken God within. That's what the Master is saying. Another devotee. Yes, sir, there is this I consciousness in us, therefore we must pray. Master to M. A man should reach the nitya, the absolute, by following the trail of lila, the relative. It is like reaching the roof by the stairs. After realizing the absolute, he should climb down to the relative and live on that plane in the company of devotees, charging his mind with the love of God. This is my final and most mature opinion. So you take the steps in the stairway, and each step itself is not to the roof. You have to traverse the steps, but you must do that. And so from a human standpoint, we must feel that we have put everything of ourselves into the effort. That is taking the steps up to the rooftop. Once we're in the rooftop, then we're completely and totally in God's care. Actually, we were from the very beginning, but now we feel that I of myself am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. We feel that we are in a completely selfless state. And this isn't anything that's manufactured or artificial. We actually feel within ourselves a vast space of emptiness, you might say, where there is no will, there is no desire, there is just the everythingness of God. And then God, if he so wills, expresses himself through your mind and comes out with a thought, comes out with some desire. And from that expresses into something that God wishes to manifest through you. But you know clearly from beginning to end that of yourself you are nothing. Now, to break the ego of its hold on us and the habit of always operating from the ego, we constantly are lifted up into that state where we know that we are nothing, and then we come back down into the state where I feel that I am the doer. And that takes over for a period of time. And through our spiritual practice, eventually we are lifted back up again. And in this process, if we can come into contact with saints or high realized beings, it helps to purify our mind. And it keeps us on track. And there is a grace that flows, even as Papa described, from being in the room of Ramakrishna, even though Ramakrishna had long ago left the body before he had done that. Nevertheless, there is this tremendous vibration that has gone out from anyone who has realized God in such a great measure. You feel that too in the Bhajan hall at Anandashram, where Papa had lived. And the very state of consciousness that Papa is in, that God streams through his body, he saturates the cells of his being. Now, some people imagine that that means, well, all life must be perfectly smooth, there must be perfect health, and so on. But this is a materialization of a divine idea, and it's not necessarily true. In fact, there are many great souls, many great masters, who are not well physically. And it may be some residual of karma that they're burning out around their own lives, that they're not yet in that fully realized state. Or have they, if they have come to the fully realized state, that means they have no more karma in that sense, but they are helping the world by burning off karma through their own physical maladies and suffering. And in this way, the saint or the master is linked to this world and for the purpose of helping to uplift this world. And it's a great thing that a master can do. Number one, they show us through example because they are not in perfect health and not everything goes perfectly smoothly for them, how to handle such situations. And so the disciples learn, they watch the master in this way. And in observing mother and going through the last 9 years of her life and what a terrific struggle she went through, I saw how she handled it. And it was tremendous, and it was a really imprinted itself on my own mind. I knew myself well enough, my own tendencies coming in. I had some tamasic tendencies coming into this world. And I could easily imagine being in mother's state of physical maladies that she was suffering and just see myself giving up. And she never did. With her tremendous will, she was always talking about recovering perfect health and getting everything operating in the way that it once did. And amazingly enough, to a large degree, she never recovered that kind of outward magnetism that she had at one time. But in terms of health, memory, functioning of mind, so many things were taken away from her. She recovered so much of that, it was really quite interesting. And it taught me a valuable lesson. How, as long as we inhabit this body, as long as we are meant to be here, then we strive with our utmost to manifest everything that God within us was wanting to do. No one is here without a purpose. And if we don't feel that we do have a purpose, it is just simply because we have not dug deeply enough. I cannot imagine a state of boredom or a state with nothing to do because they just simply don't exist in me. When you feel God awakening himself within you, you feel his purpose being awakened. Now that may be that you are to strive for him alone, even as Papa felt in leaving his hearth and his home, that he was doing it not with just an ordinary desire. He wasn't just trying to avoid life. There's no way that you can read about the life that he led and say he was trying to avoid anything. He was in the thick of it. He was going through every adversity that you can think of. And still, he was chanting the name of God continuously. Now, he never advised that people en masse leave their homes, leave their families, leave their children. That's a very difficult thing to do. That he assured everyone that being householders, that everything could be attained in that way. In fact, he said that if he came back, he would want to come back as a woman and as a mother. That's an interesting thing to say, particularly in a society where sometimes women are not held out in high esteem. And so he was thinking of coming back and entering into that worldly life, but not with an object that he had to fulfill any desire. He wanted to lift everyone up in order to know that there are no barriers, in order to realize God. And this is a great thing. And Ramakrishna is saying the same thing. With deep prayer, you can awaken God within yourself. Continuing with Ramakrishna, God has different forms, and he sports in different ways. He sports as Ishvara, Deva, man, and the universe. In every age, he descends to earth in human form and incarnation to teach people love and devotion. There is the instance of Chaitanya. One can taste devotion and love of God only through his incarnations. Infinite are the ways of God's play. But what I need is love and devotion. I want only milk. The milk comes through the udder of the cow. The incarnation is the udder. Was Sri Ramakrishna hinting that he was an incarnation of God? Did he suggest that those who saw him saw God? Did he thus speak about himself when speaking of Chaitanya? That's Master Mahasya, of course, wondering. It was a hot day in the June of 1883. Sri Ramakrishna was sitting on the steps of the Shiva temples in the temple garden. M arrived with ice and other offerings and sat down on the steps after saluting the Master. Master to Master Mahasya. The husband of Mani Malak's granddaughter was here. He read in a book that God should not be said, that God could not be quite wise and omniscient. Otherwise, why is there so much misery in the world? As regards death, it would be much better to kill a man all at once instead of putting him through slow torture. Further, the author writes that if he himself were the creator, he would have created a better world. Interesting. Haven't we all had that thought? M listened to these words in surprise and made no comment. Master, can a man ever understand God's ways? I too think of God sometimes as good and sometimes as bad. He has kept us deluded by his great illusion. Sometimes he wakes us up, and sometimes he keeps us unconscious. One moment the ignorance disappears, and the next moment it covers our mind. If you throw a brickbat into the pond, covered with moss, you get a glimpse of the water. But in a few moments later, the moss comes dancing back and covers the water. One is aware of pleasure and pain, birth and death, disease and grief, as long as one is identified with the body. All these belong to the body alone and not to the soul. After the death of the body, perhaps God carries one to a better place. It is like the birth of a child after the pain of delivery. Attaining self-knowledge, one looks on pleasure and pain, birth and death, as a dream. How can we know? Can one quart of pot, can a 1-quart pot hold a 10 quarts of milk? If ever a salt doll ventures into the ocean to measure its depth, it cannot come back and give us the information. It melts into the water and disappears. At dusk, the evening service began, the different temples. The master was sitting in a small couch in his room, absorbed in contemplation of the Divine Mother. Several devotees also were there. M was going to spend the night with the Master. A little later, Sri Ramakrishna began to talk to a devotee privately on the veranda north of his room. He said, "It is good to meditate in the small hours of the morning and at dawn. One should meditate daily after dusk." He instructed the devotee about meditation on the personal God and on the impersonal God. After a time, he sat on the semicircular porch west of his room. It was 9 o'clock. Master, those who come here will certainly have all of their doubts removed. What do you say? M, that is true, sir. A boat was moving in the Ganges, far away from the bank. The boatman began to sing. The sound of his voice floating over the river reached the master's ears, and he went into a spiritual mood. The hair on his body stood on end. He said to M, "Just feel my body." M was greatly amazed. He thought, the Upanishads describe Brahma as permeating the universe and the ether. Has that Brahman, as the sound, touched the master's body? After a time, Sri Ramakrishna began to converse again. Master, those who come here must have been born with good tendencies. Isn't that true? It is true, sir. Adar must have good tendencies. M, that goes without saying. Master, a guileless man easily realizes God. There are two paths of righteousness and the path of wickedness. One should follow the path of righteousness. M, that is true. If a thread has a single fiber sticking out, it cannot pass through the eye of the needle. Master, if a man finds a hair in the food he is chewing, he spits out the entire morsel. M, but you say that the man who has realized God cannot be injured by evil company. A blazing fire burns up even a plantain tree. And so we read about these tremendous experiences. And yet we know that we do not have to go to India. We do not have to go anywhere, really, in order to realize any of these great truths. That in the simplicity of our own life, in the comfort of our own meditation asana, we can know these same truths, the same uplifting experience, the same purity of mind, of heart, of soul. It is systemic to us, but in most people it is sleeping. It has not awakened yet. But in those that it has awakened, we get such great benefits. I want to read to you another story by Papa entitled A Silent Meeting. And it is about that there is a wonderful soul that Emerson, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who Mother said was fully realized. And here's a very interesting story about him. Emerson, the famous philosopher of America, wished to see the Englishman Thomas Carlyle. He's a famous philosopher as well. Emerson traveled from America to England by steamer, and it took him a month to reach Southampton. On landing, he proceeded straight to London, where Carlyle lived. He went to Carlyle's house, and not finding him there, went, as directed, to the club frequently by him. The man in charge pointed to Carlyle, seated on a chair at one of the tables. Emerson made for the table and sat on a chair by the side of Carlyle. They sat beside each other, without ever exchanging a single word, for about 2 hours. Then Emerson departed from that place, proceeded to Southampton, caught a steamer, and came back home. Can you imagine such a thing? He traveled a month one way, a month the other way, sat next to Carlyle for 2 hours, never exchanged a word, and came home. One of his friends on his return asked Emerson if he had met Carlyle in England and whether he had any talk with him. Emerson replied he felt extreme peace and joy in being in the delectable company of Carlyle. That was all that he said. Just imagine that each and every day you have the opportunity to sit in the presence of God. You enter into your inner temple, a temple of silence. Now, you cannot bring the world with you. In India, before you go into a temple, you kick off your shoes. And this is symbolic of taking off all the things of the world, all the concerns, all the worries. You see there so many people come to saints and go to temples to pray, but they want this thing and that thing. They're not there to seek out God realization. They want some kind of boon. They want some kind of favor. It's said in India that gurus are plentiful. Real disciples are few. Because few come and really just want God only. So each and every day, you have this capacity for entering into your own temple of purity and of peace and of joy. And what do you do with your time? Do you just simply rotate the things of the world and your concerns and your thoughts and your fantasies around and around? You have not entered into the temple. You are in the outer precincts then. In order to really enter into that temple, you have to set aside all the things of this world. Let it all go. Seek only there the presence of God, the divine presence that is ever existent, is ever new joy, is consciousness itself. And as you enter in, feel yourself entering into that Sanctum Sanctorum, that Holy of Holies, that place where only God exists. Now, in some traditions, only the priest is allowed to enter into that inner sanctum. And the symbology of that is only when you have purified yourself of this world are you allowed to enter into that innermost chamber. But you don't, it's not a formality kind of thing. It's not something that you go to a university in order to graduate from that allows you to enter into that, or going through a training program. It is through the purity of heart and mind and soul that allows you to take off all the things of this world and to enter into that most holy of places. And there God is. Now that is not a place. That is a state of consciousness within yourself. And that most ancient one, that Holy of Holies, that pure light, that pure being, that pure consciousness is existent there. And by entering in, you are purified. So there are two things. One, you must pray deeply to God in order to shake off the things of this world. But once you do and you enter in, then you are purified of it spontaneously because God is purity itself. And all things of duality, all things of separation from God drop away from you. And you know in that moment that nothing in this life or any other life comes even close in precedence to this divine presence within you. That everything of this world then, no matter how dramatic, no matter how painful or difficult at the time when you're experiencing it, it all seems to fall away. And there is nothing there except God. And now the world and your life in it seems to be but a dream. And God is the sole reality. God is the heart pumping within your own blood, the blood within your own being. God is the thoughts, if they are there, that are streaming through you, or perhaps you are just in a complete state of stillness in which there is not a breath, not a thought, nothing, nothing, but the purity of the divine presence. And being purified in that divine presence, you feel yourself one and whole with the divine being. Now, to some, this can seem a sacrilege, that you should say that I and my Father are one. And yet, there are saints and realized beings from around the world who have testified to this very fact. And so, we enter into that Sanctum Sanctorum. We go into that Holy of Holies. We feel ourselves cleansed and purified. That there is nothing but that one. And then if God wills it, He stirs within us, so to speak, and creates a thought. It's not like disturbing thoughts before that kept us outside of that temple. It is an expression of the divine Creator Himself. Something He wishes to accomplish in you. And so you feel that thought, and that thought flows out and brings you into this worldly consciousness, but you are different now. You are changed. You don't come out in a totally human state. You come out charged with a divine presence. There is an inner stillness within your own heart that is never moved by anything within this world. You feel yourself to be in union with God even while you move about in this world. And now you feel yourself to be an expression of the divine consciousness. And you act not for any end product, but because you feel that it is God's will within you to act in such a way. Now, this is not a state that can be manufactured by the mind, and it cannot hold any desire nature on your own part, or it is not divine will any longer. It is the purity of divine will moving through you, thinking through you, speaking through you, doing everything through you. And yet you can appear to be ordinary to anybody without eyes to see. You think of the other people who are in that club who are sitting near Carlyle. And perhaps he was famous for publishing some books on philosophy and so on. And so they may have held him in great esteem. But who had the eyes to see him as Emerson saw him and experience him? Other people could have come, the waiters, the other people, club members, could have been in just as close a proximity and not had the experience that Emerson did. And so he had the eyes to see, the ears to hear, that inner attunement to experience him in such a way. And the truth is that sacred ground is all around us. The air that we breathe is actually permeated with divine bliss, even now. But who experiences it in that way? The ground that we stand upon, or the floor that we stand upon, the walls that are here, the ceiling, the sunlight itself, the air, all of the plants, all of the people, are divine expressions already. Even if they walk about in apparent ignorance, they are already divine expressions. If God created everything, and he created out of the substance, out of the fabric of his own being, and what else would there be for him to create with, then how could there be anything that is not of God's substance, whatever the appearance is? And the conundrum is this, is that as long as you look out through these two eyes that are only informed by your human reasoning and your human experience, you say, of course, there is suffering. Of course, why would somebody have a long illness and not just drop the body? Why is there only not just happiness, not just those things that make life easy? If there were a God, why would he not create a world like that? And the truth is, there are worlds like that. And there are astral worlds that are exactly like that. And yet we as individualized souls, we wanted this adventure. We wanted to come into this realm of duality. We wanted to have this experience exactly as we are having it. Now, you ask somebody to give up their style, their mode of being. I one time thought, well, you know, people who are thought of as nerds, that they don't care how they dress. But you try to get that nerd to dress some way different, and you've got a fight on your hands. They won't do it. They'll wear the pocket protector. They'll have the glasses with the tape in the center. They want what they want. They're very wedded to it. They're very style conscious in their own way. And yet you wouldn't think so, because you try to get them to change and they won't do it. And I love the story of the master who was sitting around gossiping. And one of the disciples pikes up and he says, "Master, you should be teaching us some spiritual truths here. You're just gossiping about this person and that." He says, "What good does it do to teach you any spiritual truths?" And he went around from one to another. He said, "What are you going to do tomorrow?" And they all had their plans and they all had their schedules. He said, "See, you have your days laid out before you. Not anything that I say is going to change any of you. And he went right back to gossiping again. So you think about it. You think about it. Do we really change ourselves? Or do we just, are we really wedded to our own ignorance? Do we really know what to do? But we don't do it. If we are promised real peace, a peace that surpasses all understanding, if we are promised bliss and realization, knowledge about God and the truth of God, and we do not run for that goal, then how can we say we really think that that is true? Why would we waste a minute not chanting God's name, not praying to Him, not loving Him, not meditating deeply upon Him? The truth is, we are attached to our ignorance, to our separation. And what that really means, and it's very humbling to come to this realization, we don't really want God. But Ramakrishna assures us that if we pray deeply, we can stir that grace of God within us. And we can come to that state of realization in which we know our oneness with God. He assures all that, and not just Him, but all of the great masters, all of the great ones. Mother had an oppositional force where there is a master in India. He's very highly revered by many, even to today. But Mother read where he had said that, what do you want with Nirvikalpa Samadhi? Be satisfied with just playing on this realm of duality, serving God in this form. You see? That's not going straight to the top and then trusting that if God wants you to continue, that you will do it. There was a Hatha Yoga teacher who recently left the body. And I used to attend a studio where Iyengar was the teacher of the teacher. And I had wondered about him one time, and I picked up one of these magazines that have New Age Times, something like that. And I had an interview with him, and the first thing that I read was he was saying, I will always practice Hatha Yoga. Even if God Himself told me to stop my practice, I wouldn't do it. I'd keep going. And I put the magazine down and I thought, what do I want with this? It's pure ignorance. And it's pure ego. Of course, we must come to that place where we're willing to surrender everything that we are. And it is only through that that we will enter into that heavenly realm. And we do not have to die in order to do that. I watched an interesting movie Carla and I did last night. Heaven is Real, I think it's entitled. And it's about a little girl who was very sick. They took her into the hospital, and while they were working on her, she didn't die, so it was not a near-death experience. Or a little boy, excuse me, not a little girl, a little boy. And he's just 4 years old, I think. And when he came out of this, he said that he had gone to heaven. And his parents were very skeptical about this. His father was a minister, a small church in a small town. And they were very skeptical about all of this. And but then he started saying some things. He knew, had met the father's grandfather, who had been very influential in him becoming a minister. And had said some things and some particular words that he just mystified the father. He wouldn't know how this child would have this kind of information. And the mother was even more skeptical, and he says, I met my sister there. And she said, well, you have a sister here. He says, no, I have two sisters. And I met my sister, my other sister there. And she said, what? And she said, he said, she was in your womb. And she was never born. She said, what was her name? She didn't have a name. You never gave her a name. And they had never spoken to this boy about this unborn daughter that they had had. But he knew about it and met her. And he said, she kept hugging me there and wouldn't let me go. And so it was a very, very interesting thing to see the evolution of the mother and father of, oh, well, this is a child's fantasy, and isn't that nice? And, of course, he's heard about these things in church, and so now he's telling them. But he knew things that he knew what the father, that the father is very angry while he's getting this operation because it looked like he was going to die. And he kicked over a chair, and he was shouting at God. And he said, you are in the chapel, and you are really angry at God. So it's fascinating, isn't it? And it was interesting to see this Christian community and how many people didn't want to accept this. You know, they all talk the talk. We believe in heaven, and when you die, you go to heaven, and so on. But it's harder when you run into an experience like this. And so that this reality, this divine reality, is permeating everything that is. It's in the air that we breathe. It's in the world that we live in. It's in every person that we meet. I read a saying of, I think it was Gandhi's recently, that if you don't recognize God in the next person that you meet, why go further? What do you think you're going to do by meeting more people? See God in that person, no matter what guise that they were. And this is a great truth, a great thing. So as we go about living our lives, doing the things that we do, let us really be on guard against being attached to even the things we don't like about our life. Those things can be particularly strong attachments. Isn't that a strange thing? That we would actually be very attached to the things we don't like, but it's true. And that we can cling to those things. And to release ourselves, when we enter into the temple, let us kick off our shoes and not carry anything of the world in with us, so that we might enter into that innermost sanctum, that holy of holies, and know who and what we truly are. Will you please pray with me? O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet, and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body, my mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Peace. Bliss. Amen. Pranam. I bow to the light within you.